You guys know what greases are? White trash with long, greasy hair.
You know what a soche is?
What?
White trash with Mustangs and Madges.
Get him! Yeah.
Kids from the wrong side of the tracks have to grow up fast when they kill a rich bully. This week, we discuss an extremely bizarre field trip, the difference between a rumble and fisticuffs, and how Entourage actually makes something better. Then we find out if The Outsiders stands the test of time.
It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says Gladiator with a glut. Alan says as a father, blah, blah. It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say.
Hello, everyone, and if you're just joining us for the first time, welcome to our podcast. And for those of you joining in once again, this is The Test of Time, where we talk about movies from times past, at least 15 years old, but mostly from the 80s and 90s. And we see, do these films hold up? Do they stand the test of time? And who do I discuss this with and contemplate this huge question? My buddy, my co-host, Alan Noah.
That is me. How you doing, James? Good to see you today.
I'm good. I'm excited because do you know what my favorite weekend of the year is, Al?
I do. It's this weekend, which is Nick's Marathon. So this episode is being released on November 20th of 2020. Obviously, you may be listening to it on November 20th, 2020, or at some point in the distant future. Maybe it's 2047. Maybe it's the year 3086 and you are a robot alien overlord. I don't know. But if you do happen to be listening to this episode right away, the weekend of November 20th, 2020, we are doing Nick's Marathon, and we've talked about it on the show before, but here's just a quick recap. It's a charity that James and I run. We named it after our friend Nicholas Capobianco, who passed away 12 years ago. He lost his battle with leukemia, and every year we get together, we play a ton of video games, and we raise money in Nick's name. It's a great charity. It's obviously very close to our hearts, and we encourage you to donate if you can. If you can't, that's okay. But hey, just watch us. Go to nicksmarathon.org and you can watch us playing video games. Usually, we're all together in James's apartment. This year, because of COVID-19, we are going to be doing it remotely. But we had this idea, actually, I think it was your idea, James, to all play different Mario games at the same time, remotely. So it's kind of like when you have a Zoom meeting or a Google Meet and you have all of the different images of different people. It's like that, except a bunch of people playing Mario games. So you can watch us, you can chat with us, you can tell us we suck. If you're able, if you're so inclined, you can make a tax-deductible donation to a great cause.
I think it's going to be kind of cool that we're, even if we're doing different streams and, you know, we're not together, we're all kind of working on the same goal, which is Mario games. And we'll see, you know, who can beat Mario 3 first, or who can get the most stars in Mario 64 before the weekend's over. And it should be pretty fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited about it. I'm bummed that I'm not going to be hanging out with you and the guys and all the friends I never get to see. Like, that's the fun stuff. That's what I'm really going to miss. But hey, listen, everything's different this year. What can you do? We're still going to get together. We're still going to have a good time and raise some money for a good cause. So if you're listening to the episode right away, please go to nicksmarathon.org.
And if you're listening in the future, get out of your space cars and donate to nicksmarathon.org.
Even if you're listening to this episode months from now or years from now, you can still make a donation. Also, just follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Nick's Marathon, NicksMarathon.
And I do just want to clarify something. Obviously, if you have the technology to have a space car, you're going to have internet access. So you don't really have to get out of your space car. Actually, stay in your space car if you're in space. But let's just agree that you should donate to nicksmarathon.org.
Right, right. But let's get back to the test of time. And this episode is continuing our trilogy of episodes where we are talking about movies that come from fan requests. Last week, we talked about Crocodile Dundee, which came to us on Facebook. This week, we're talking about The Outsiders, which came as a request on Twitter from our fan Michelle D., at Gamecock Mitch, and she is a big fan of the show. She talks to us all the time on Twitter, and ages ago, Michelle mentioned The Outsiders and said that we should do an episode on it, and I apologize, Michelle, that it took us this long to get around to it, but I knew nothing about this movie, and I was interested to check it out because I think what, Michelle, you wrote to us on Twitter was that it stars a young Ralph Macchio and Tom Cruise and Patrick Swayze and all of these people in like their first role or their first big role, and the cast in this movie is just unbelievable. I had never watched this movie before. James, had you seen it? Had you heard of it?
I had heard of this film that there was a young Ralph Macchio. I had heard of something about Tom Cruise maybe being in the film. Certainly a young Matt Dillon. And there always was this name that I used to hear in the 80s. This name is C. Thomas Howell. And I never knew who this guy was. But I was pretty sure he must be a big deal. Then I never heard of him again. And I did realize that we did bring him up in one episode of The Test of Time. Do you remember what episode we talked about? Probably his most famous film, you could say.
C. Thomas Howell?
Yes.
I do not recall. Refresh my memory.
The premise was so ridiculous. We had our verdict right away. Do you remember what film that was, Al?
Oh, Soul Man?
Yes, Soul Man. So it was this ridiculous film that basically the premise was C. Thomas Howell, probably, I guess, the star of this film. He is a Caucasian, but in this film, he played a white person faking being an African-American so that he could get into Harvard. And that is the C. Thomas Howell film that I believe must have just derailed his career.
Interesting. Yeah, it's funny in that this movie has such an A-list cast of big names that you know, but the main character is the one guy who pretty much kind of faded into obscurity. I think he still works. I don't mean to be overly harsh on the guy, but compared to Tom Cruise, Rob Lowe, Emilio Estevez, and all the other guys in the movie. Even Ralph Macchio didn't do a ton, but everybody knows the Karate Kid. I don't think a ton of people could just rattle off a bunch of C. Thomas Howell movies. So it is weird that he is the star of the movie.
Yeah, and you have everyone in this film from, you know, A-list Tom Cruise to, you know, people you never heard of. But also the director of this film, I had no idea, is Francis Ford Coppola, you know, most famous for Godfather Part 1 and 2.
Not 3.
I actually saw the Godfather trilogy all at once, sometime shortly after college. And while I thought the second film was by far the best one, I thought 3 was fine in the context that I didn't wait 20 years for that.
We'll review the Godfather trilogy. I'd be interested to revisit the third one also, Apocalypse Now. And yeah, this is not like Francis Ford Coppola's first movie. Like, he's done a bunch of movies by this point. And this movie, The Outsiders, is based on a novel by S.E. Hinton. And it's about a group of boys known as the Greasers who are teenage outcasts in rural Oklahoma. The Greasers don't follow the rules, and they don't get along with the rich kids in town who are known as the Socias. When two of the Greasers, Ponyboy and Johnny, get into a fight that ends in the death of a Soche, they hide out while the authorities look for them. They end up saving some children from a burning fire, and though Johnny is injured, Ponyboy decides to head home. There's a big rumble between the Greasers and the Socias, and while some Greasers are able to move on with their lives, others meet tragic ends. Very sad. So, this movie came out in 1983 when you and I were 3.5 years old, so definitely didn't see it in the theaters. Was it a big hit?
This was a $10 million budget film. It actually opened at number two with $5 million. Number one was a film I've just never heard of. It's a film, I looked at the poster of it. It just looks so awful. It was a movie called Spring Break. The synopsis is, two college guys spend a spring break together in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. They have lots of fun in and out of the sun.
I mean, it kind of sounds like a lot of fun.
I mean, it sounds wonderful. I actually went down a rabbit hole and I looked it up on IMDb. Apparently, two quote-unquote jocks head down to spring break and they have nowhere to stay because everything's overbooked. So they have to share a room with guess what kind of guys they had to share with. What's the worst thing for a jock to have to share a room with in 1983?
Oh, man, don't say nerds. It's not nerds, is it? Please say it's not nerds.
It's two nerds.
Oh, they're the worst. I hate nerds.
That's right. But you know, in the end, I don't know, maybe lessons are learned. I didn't really get that far. But that film wound up making $25 million, equal to the amount of money that this film, The Outsiders, earned at the worldwide box office, $25 million.
Interesting. So I have to say that when the movie starts, I was immediately taken by the cheesy effects in the credits where the cast of characters is on one side of the screen and it's perfectly easy to read them, but then it like zooms over to their names so they get like even bigger. It was just such like a hokey effect. Like the only thing I could think of was if I was making a cheesy video with like my kids in it on iMovie, I wouldn't use an effect that hokey.
Francis Ford Coppola, I mean, he's from the old school method of filmmaking. He saw, you know, this is a cool effect we could do. Watch this, Mr. Coppola. And he's just like, that is going to hypnotize the audiences. They've never seen anything like it. But, you know, I mean, we've seen things like this. Like 1977's, I want to say, Superman the movie. Famously, the opening credits, it was like a special effect marvel that they were able to fly those 3D letters through space. But it was incredibly boring to watch when we reviewed it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, these credits weren't that long, but it just made me laugh. I also did notice that there were a lot of other Coppolas besides Francis Coppola. I counted four, I believe. He's known to make sure that he hires family members in his movies, but this movie was definitely no exception. The handful of other Coppolas worked on this.
Oh, and there's lots of other, like, non-Coppola Coppolas, like, you know, Nicolas Cage and Jason Schwartzman. Who knows? Maybe the entire film is Coppola's and we wouldn't know it.
I think Nick Cage is, like, an extra in this movie. It might be uncredited. He's not, like, a character. You might just be able to see him in one background shot. The movie, it starts with a little bit of voiceover. The main character, Pony Boy, is writing some kind of essay, report, something. Very quickly, we're introduced to this gang of guys, and they are the Greasers. And there's Pony Boy, who's C. Thomas Howell. There's his buddy Johnny, who's played by a young Ralph Macchio. And they also hang out with a guy named Dallas, who's played by a young Matt Dillon. And those are the main group of Greasers that we meet in the beginning. Pony Boy also has two older brothers, Daryl, who's played by Patrick Swayze, and Soda Pop, played by Rob Lowe. And very quickly, you get the idea that in this town, there's the haves and the have-nots, the poor kids versus the rich kids, and the poor kids are the Greasers, and the rich kids are the Socs. It stands for socials, socialites, whatever.
Yeah, it's probably the socialites, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that trope in a million other things. The Goonies, it's a big theme in the Veronica Mars TV show. It's nothing new, you know, poor kids versus rich kids.
Capulets, Montagues, the Hatfield McCoy. Well, I guess this one is rich, one's poor. So I guess it's not just Family Feud.
Yeah, not exactly the same. But right away, they go up to Dallas, the Matt Dillon character, like, what do you want to do? And he says, nothing legal. And then, you know, he's a bad boy.
That's a great line. Matt Dillon, in my mind, I've underrated him because of his brother. What's his brother's name?
Kevin Dillon.
Kevin Dillon. And I'm not knocking Kevin Dillon's acting. It's just that maybe he's actually such a good actor that in Entourage, I only watched like a season or two of that show, but he plays such a bad actor. In a weird way, it rubbed off on me that the Dillons are like terrible actors.
That's weird.
I know it is, because I think Matt Dillon's a very good actor. Kevin Dillon's a fine actor too, but every time I see Matt Dillon, I'm always kind of like, oh, he's not a good actor. And then I'm always like impressed by his acting. I don't know why. Well, I guess I do know why, because of Kevin Dillon's character in Entourage.
Entourage ruins everything.
No, but in a weird way, it always makes him better, because I'm always, you know, really underestimating what he's going to present. And then he always delivers. But I actually watched, by accident, I should mention that I watched the director's edition. It's got a couple, like, additional scenes in it. In the beginning here, after we've seen that these greasers, you know, they don't have much, we see a couple of times that they're getting kind of jumped at the car wash, and they get into little scuffles. But the thing is, it's always fist fights. It's always just kind of pow, and then, you know, one team wins, one team loses, and there's a couple of these skirmishes.
I didn't see any car wash scene. The big first scene in the theatrical cut is at the drive-in movies, and there's a girl whose boyfriend is being very handsy, and she wants nothing to do with him, and she goes over to like these folding chairs, kind of, which I thought was a little bit weird. I thought that the whole point of a drive-in movie was that you had to be in a car, but I guess it makes sense to have some just standard chairs there for people who don't drive. I guess that's a cool thing. Maybe it's a discounted price or something. I don't know.
Have you ever been to a drive-in, Al?
Yeah, when I was a kid.
I've been to a drive-in with my sister, friend of the show, Joanna Brief. We drove with a truck, and the best thing about a big pickup truck is that you kind of back in, and you put a pillow, and you put blankets, and everyone kind of lies down. And I didn't realize how much better a drive-in is just being outdoors in the summer. It's not about sitting in your seat and being able to watch a movie. It was about being able to watch a movie outside on a huge TV. And, you know, you bring a little portable radio where you can listen to the car radio. That was a lot of fun. So I totally understand why they were just kind of sitting outside. And you would definitely want just kind of some spectator stands out there too.
I had said long ago that like someday Courtney and I should open up a drive-in movie theater somewhere nearby. And then COVID-19 hit. And I was like, damn it, that would have been the best business to have right now, because everyone would want to go. And there have been like, you know, little pop-up drive-in movies and parking lots and things. But I still stand by that. Maybe someday my dream will come true and we'll have our own drive-in movie theater. But this female character who's at the movies, her name is Cherry, and she's played by a young Diane Lane. And I knew about all of the young boys in this movie. I didn't realize that there was also an actress who would go on to be very famous. But she and her girlfriend have left their boyfriends, and Dallas is being really just, I think he thinks he's flirting with them, but he's just being really weird and creepy, and they're not at all interested in him. But Pony Boy and Johnny, they're sweet, and they're talking to them, and they're kind of hitting it off, and Cherry seems to like Pony Boy, and they leave the movie theater together, the drive-in together, and their Soch boyfriends show up and basically threaten everyone that, like, you're gonna get hurt to the boys, and to the girls, you better get in the car. And the girls are like, we better just go with them. We don't want there to be a fight. Cherry says she hates violence. And then she says to Pony Boy, if I see you at school and I don't say hi, I hope you understand. And it's like such an awful thing to say. And he's kind of like, yeah, yeah, I get it. You're a Soch. I'm a greaser. That's life. But then, as bad as that is, she makes it even worse when she says, I hope I never see Dallas again. If I do, I'd probably fall in love with him. Like, why would she say that? He clearly likes her. They've been flirting all night. And then she's like, I can't talk to any greasers ever because of my social standing. But if I did, it would be your cuter friend. He's just dreamy. Anyway, bye. Like, that's like two knives in the heart at once.
I mean, to me, maybe it's just because of the size of these two guys, but I saw Pony Boy as more of like, a high school freshman, maybe sophomore, 15-year-old, whereas I saw Matt Dillon as he's the senior. He's a little older and a little more bad boy. And when you're a 16-year-old girl, I think that might be a little more enticing.
I get that. I just feel like she didn't need to say it out loud to him. That was the part that I didn't really understand.
Well, in her credit, she's like 16 years old. So 16-year-olds would say something stupid like that.
This is true. Then Johnny and Ponyboy end up sleeping outside in a field because they don't want to go to their homes. They don't have great family lives. Then after a while of being outside and Johnny is crying and he's upset and he's talking about killing himself because the world is terrible and he hates his life, Ponyboy's like, all right, you know what? I'm going to go home. He goes home and his older brother, Daryl, pushes him and he's like, you know what? Nope, I can't deal with this. He leaves again. And he and Johnny just go for a walk in town and they end up at a playground where they are tracked down by the Socias. Real quick point about the Socias as they're like driving over to them and threatening them. They had like a light on the side of their car. You know, like you see that on cop cars. It almost looks like a spotlight on the side view mirror. Maybe that was a thing in the 60s, but it just struck me as very weird.
It is odd. And in the last fight that I had seen in the director's cut, the Socias are pushing the greasers around, and one greaser takes out a knife. And the Socias are like, whoa, 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 hey, hey, hey. And then the cops come, and like everyone just kind of runs away. But this time, the Socias go up to Ponyboy, and they start beating up Ponyboy and Johnny, and they knock Ponyboy into, I guess, like a fountain. Mm-hmm. And you assume they're just kind of roughhousing them, because like I said earlier, all these fights are just, it's just fist fights. And, you know, these guys are total douches, but it's like the kind of guys who are doing a swirly on you in the toilet. Like, they're not actually trying to drown you, but, you know, we had just seen this scene where Johnny just, he can't stand it anymore. And he's just been bullied. He has no family. He has no one really in his corner. And the Socias have everything. They got cars. They got girls. And they're beating him up. There's more of them than there are the greasers. You just see him take out a switchblade. And he walks over to the boys that are drowning. Or, you know, dunking Ponyboy.
Right. Then there's this really weird quote-unquote effect where it's supposed to look like blood in the water. We don't see exactly what happens, but next thing you know, Ponyboy is coming to and he's like, what happened? And Johnny says, I killed him. And we should mention that this boy that Johnny stabs is the most famous person in this movie at this point, not the most famous person in the movie today. Did you recognize who that was?
It's funny you mention that. I was thinking he looked like someone famous, but I couldn't put a finger on it.
The character's name is Bob, and the actor is Leif Garrett, who is known mostly for his music career. He was a teen heartthrob, didn't have a ton of hits. I really knew him best for his Behind the Music episode on VH1. That was like one of the really good ones. He like got into a car accident with one of his friends and he hadn't seen that friend in years. And then like they reconnected on Behind the Music and the cameras were rolling. And it was like a very heartfelt moment. But in 1983, when this movie came out, no one had heard of Tom Cruise or Matt Dillon or Ralph Macchio or Patrick Swayze, but people had heard of Leif Garrett, and his character is killed off pretty early on in the movie, and that's it. You never see him again. So just interesting looking at it from a 2020 perspective when you had no idea who he was, which is totally fair, but in 1983, he was the one that maybe was putting butts in seats.
That's interesting, but you'd kind of imagine if this guy's a singer, he may not be the best actor. I don't remember this guy speaking that much, so it's the kind of role that could be somewhat prominent without having to be a professional actor.
Yeah, he doesn't do a lot of heavy lifting, for sure. But so after they kill Leif Garrett's character, Bob, they go and find Dallas. Dallas gives them $50 and a gun, tells them where to go to catch the freight train, go to some other town, and there's an abandoned church on a hill. Go there, hide out, and he'll be there to visit when he can. And It was interesting to me because at this point, Dallas is being really kind and big brotherly. And in the earlier scenes with him, he was just kind of being like a jerk and he only wants to do illegal things. And he was really nasty to Cherry. But here we get to see that he's actually nice to his friends, at least.
Yeah, I mean, he sees them as brothers. You know, you mess around with your brothers, but, you know, you still love them. So this was a serious thing. So they showed the true character of the Dallas character, which is that he's a good guy, even if he's a crook, you know?
Yeah, he's a greaser, but a nice greaser.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between a criminal that has no remorse and no empathy and a criminal that, you know, he knows he's doing bad stuff. But maybe when there's a burning building full of kids, you know, you risk your life to rescue them.
Yes, but you're getting ahead of ourselves. So Johnny and Ponyboy get to the church and to make themselves incognito, they give each other a haircut, but with a knife. Now, having been quarantined for the last, God, how many months are we up to now? 8 months, I guess. I've only gotten my haircut in that time from Courtney, my wife, and she's done a pretty good job, I think. But the first couple of times, she wasn't a natural. She'd never done it before, and it kind of tugged a little bit. I cannot imagine having my hair cut with a knife. It looks like it's kind of dull. It had to hurt.
Well, not only did it have to hurt, but this C. Thomas Howell guy, he goes in with this like shaggy brown hair, and they also dye his hair, which I guess they found a bottle of peroxide, and he comes out with a perfect Hollywood teen heartthrob blonde head of hair. I mean, it just was interesting how they did it like that.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely looks dreamy. Also, if they both need to be incognito, shouldn't they both dye their hair? Also, Johnny is the one who actually killed the guy, so there would be more heat on him. Shouldn't he really have used the peroxide if there was only enough peroxide for one of them?
Yeah, I just think Ralph Macchio would look particularly silly as a bleach blonde.
That is a fair point. But while they're holed up together, they are bonding, they're talking, and apparently Ponyboy is kind of deep, and he is quoting Robert Frost, and he's talking about the sunsets and nature and all of these things that they never really noticed, but life is beautiful. And he's talking about Stay Gold, and that's the Robert Frost poem, and he can like recite this whole thing by memory, and you wouldn't necessarily expect that from a greaser like him, but he has an appreciation of art and nature. And Johnny's saying like, boy, I never even noticed sunsets and colors and stuff, but now I can see and it's really beautiful, man.
Then these guys do something I cannot imagine. Ugh, it's so stupid. What do you do when you skip town and you sneak onto a passenger train and you get off and go through backwoods and back roads to try to find an abandoned church to live in? What is the first thing you do when someone else comes?
Don't go out for burgers?
No. Apparently you do go out for burgers in a very, very public place, like kind of like a Dairy Queen kind of place where all the other teenagers are coming. And they also seem to come out to your car door to bring you your order.
Right. Yeah. Dallas shows up and is like, hey, guys, good to see you. Let's go get burgers. You're probably starving. Like, no. You get burgers on the way to see them, and then you say, hey guys, you're probably starving, which is why I brought burgers. You don't take them out with you. The whole point is that they're holed up in an abandoned church. Why an abandoned church? Because nobody's there. So, like, going out in public is completely stupid.
And while they are out, like, they're like, oh my God, that was close. We almost got seen. And they're like ducking in the car. And it's like, no shit. Like, how are you guys not like under blankets in the car?
Well, what he's saying is that, oh, we almost got caught with the gun, because Dallas is taking out his gun and looking at it. And then a little girl comes over and asks for change. That little girl, by the way, is Sofia Coppola. I didn't recognize her, I will confess. I only read that on IMDb. So that was a thing. They didn't want to be caught with the gun. But then they get back to this abandoned church and it's on fire and there are all of these kids inside. And, you know, pretty quickly, you know, they decide to go in and rescue the kids. But before we get to that, I'm like, wait, how did the church light on fire and why are there kids there? How it got on fire, I think they sort of allude to because they're smoking constantly, these kids. And at one point, I think Ponyboy says to Johnny, don't leave the lit cigarette or something like that. So maybe there was a lit cigarette that caught fire on something. But you would think when they're going out for burgers, there would be like that one lingering shot of the cigarette smoking near the hay bale or something. But we don't see that. Okay, fine. We understand that that's what happened, probably. Why are all of these kids at this church? It looks like it's a field trip. Who takes a field trip with a bunch of kids to an abandoned church on the top of a hill?
I was thinking the exact same thing, and I was wondering if I missed something. And I watched the extended edition, so I will tell you that there is no additional scene that explains why those children are there.
It's so incredibly bizarre. I mean, it does really seem like a school trip because there's a bunch of kids. It's not just like, you know, two or three siblings. There's two adults with them, but they all go in to rescue these kids. Dallas is a little bit more hesitant than Johnny and Ponyboy, but they're able to go in and rescue all of the kids. Johnny is seriously hurt. Dallas and Ponyboy are, you know, a little banged up, but they're fine. Johnny really got hit by like some girder or something that fell down and crushed him, and it looks like he's broken his back.
Yeah, it seems like he's paralyzed and severely burned. We don't see the extent of it, but you get the impression that when we can see the top of his shoulders are charred, so he's probably got extensive burns all over his body. And this is a small town hospital, and he's not long for the world.
Right. And so while Johnny is holed up in the hospital, Ponyboy and Dallas go home, and Ponyboy is worried about being sent to a boys' home because he was involved in the murder. Although, not really. I mean, he was like passed out when Johnny stabbed the guy. I guess maybe aiding and abetting or fleeing a crime scene or something, but like he didn't stab the guy. Johnny's got more to worry about in terms of the law. But it's actually kind of sweet when Ponyboy goes home because his brothers, Daryl and Soda Pop, are like really happy to see him. And Daryl says he's sorry for shoving him and he's not going to do that anymore. And their parents are dead, but, you know, they're all they've got and they're really going to stick together from here on out. And it's kind of sweet.
Then there's a strange scene after this where Ponyboy seems to go up to one of the social guys, this soch named Randy. And he seems to have kind of a heart-to-heart with him. It's sort of implying, like, you know, one of yours is dead, one of ours is paralyzed at this point. It seems like the two guys kind of shake hands.
Yeah, I mean, Randy, that's the soch, he's upset because his best friend was killed. But on the other hand, he's like, I wouldn't have expected any of you greasers to be heroes because that's what they are for rescuing all of those kids. And he's read about it in the papers. And he's sort of saying like, I don't know, maybe we're not so different, you and me. And do we need to fight? Because there is this big rumble scheduled between the Soches and the greasers. And Randy is kind of saying, maybe we don't need to rumble. And Ponyboy kind of seems to agree with that. You know, like, what's it going to solve? Randy even says, like, at the end of the day, maybe you win, maybe we win the fight, but we're going to go back and we're still going to be rich and you're still going to go home and you're still going to be poor. What's the point? He's right, really. Then there's a scene with Cherry and Ponyboy. She's a soch, but she's kind of sympathetic to the greasers' cause, and yet only kind of, because she likes Ponyboy and thinks he's a nice kid, but she's upset that his friend Johnny killed her boyfriend. And Ponyboy's like, but your boyfriend was a jerk, and you know that. And she's like, yeah, but he was also kind of sweet, and he didn't have to kill him. You can see it from Cherry's point of view. Her boyfriend was killed. She's not so thrilled with the guy who killed her boyfriend. even if it was self-defense. But then we get to the big rumble. Even though Ponyboy seemed to maybe be a little bit on the fence about it, he shows up. Even though Dallas got a little bit hurt in the fire, he shows up. Even though Daryl and Soda Pop kind of have like a good job going at the gas station, they show up. And really, they all consider it like an obligation to be there. But also, hey, it's going to be kind of fun because we get to stomp on some guys.
Yeah, and I apologize to the cast of this film and to Mr. Coppola, but I couldn't think of anything but Anchorman when I saw this. I mean, I just kept thinking of like, I mean, when do you see just like street brawls? I guess we had seen it in The Warriors a little bit, but this was like, you know, war in the streets.
I think the fight itself was choreographed well. Apparently, Tom Cruise got hit so hard he like actually needed real life dental work after the scene. It was raining the first night that they filmed, and then it wasn't raining the second night. So then they had to like spray the guys with water, and it made it extra muddy. The weird thing is that it ends basically because a bunch of the Socias run away. The music crescendos in this big triumphant like moment, and it's like, wait, that's it? They won? How do you know that they win? There's like 20 guys versus 20 guys. Eventually, some guys leave. How do you officially declare the victor of a rumble? And also, like, so what? You know, like, what's the big deal? I was expecting that maybe someone was going to get killed in this rumble, but that's not what happens.
No, and to these boys' credit, you know, everyone kind of behaved themselves, and it was just another fist fight. So everyone was able to live to see the next day, and there was a winner and a loser, and no one was stabbed.
But then they go back to the hospital to visit Johnny and tell him, hey, guess what? We had the rumble, and we beat up all the other guys. But Johnny doesn't really care about the rumble, and he dies. And this is heartbreaking for Ponyboy, and it's also really heartbreaking for Dallas. Dallas kind of loses it at this point. He's been carrying around a gun with him, and it's unloaded, but now he starts whipping it out at everyone. He points it at a doctor who's telling him, like, hey, you're not supposed to be here. And he's like, I can be wherever I want. And he takes the gun and he pulls the trigger. It's not loaded, so nothing happens. Then he goes and robs a convenience store. And then he basically does suicide by cop. He runs out into the street and he's pointing his gun at police officers and they shoot him. He seems like he wants to die. And I don't know, this really kind of felt out of character for me. Like, even though we've seen that Dallas is kind of big brotherly to these guys, and I could understand why he would be upset that Johnny dies, I just didn't understand why he would want to die after it. I don't know. Like, I didn't feel like we got that sense of that character.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it would have been weird if Ponyboy kind of went crazy because he was a little poetic and we saw him with voiceover in the beginning that this guy's an intelligent guy that had this big bond with Johnny. But I think Matt Dillon, he acted well and I think he really was upset at Johnny's death, but the script didn't do it any favors by explaining to us why he was upset.
Exactly, exactly. There's something missing there. And then the movie ends with Ponyboy finding this letter from Johnny that he left in a copy of Gone with the Wind, which is a book they had been reading when they were holed up together. And it's got another really hokey effect of while Ponyboy is reading, you see Johnny on the side of the screen and Johnny is saying, tell Dallas that he should look at the sunsets. And then you see Dallas on the other side of the screen. You know, it's kind of like that translucent effect where it's kind of supposed to be ghostly, I guess, because they're both dead. And it's very sad that Ponyboy lost his two best friends. And then the movie ends the way it began, with Ponyboy telling the story of everything that happened. And that's it. That's the end of the movie.
You know, I'll just add that in the director's cut, there's an additional small scene that Ponyboy is found not guilty at a court case. and that the Curtis brothers, you know, the Patrick Swayze, Rob Lowe, and C. Thomas Howell's characters, those brothers, they get back together and decide we're not going to fight anymore. They're going to stick together.
Well, apparently, the reason that there is this extended edition was because that there were scenes from the movie that were shot that more closely follow the novel. And I think it was Francis Coppola's granddaughter read the book for school. And she was like, "Grandpa, there's a bunch of stuff that's in the book. It's not in the movie." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, the studio made us cut it out. We'll put it back in." And they made the director's cut. But it's interesting to hear you say that it doesn't necessarily fix a lot of the structural problems along the way. I guess it's not a bad thing to see that they decide that they're not going to fight anymore and they're going to live life on the straight and narrow path or whatever. But I don't know if it really improves the ending. Do you feel like it made it a stronger ending?
I was wondering, like, just because you rescue kids from a church, that doesn't get you out of jail. I mean, maybe karma-wise, I mean, that's between you and your God. But I was wondering, why is Pony Boy just kind of walking around? I guess in your version, it was cut out that there's one point when everyone's kind of welcoming Pony Boy back into their gang, and he whispers to his brother, he goes, "What about the court case?" And he goes, "Shut up about that." And then you later see the court case.
I guess seeing the court case is fine, but like I was saying before, I just don't see what Pony Boy did that was really so terrible. He got jumped and he was nearly drowned and he probably had a lot of water in his lungs and then he passed out. And then when he came to, someone was dead. So, I mean, I guess like he's the only living witness, so I can understand why there's an investigation, but I don't really care to see like a trial scene. I think that's a fine thing to leave on the cutting room floor.
The guy's just walking around town. Like, you have to at least in passing say, like, "Yeah, the cops said I didn't, there was no evidence, so they let me go." He's just walking around town. There needed to be something.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, so Al, what do you think about 1983's The Outsiders? Does it stand the test of time?
I think that there's certain things about this movie that do stand the test of time. Most notably is the cast. I mean, so many of these guys have gone on to have long careers. Guys and girl, I don't know if girls plural, the other female actor, I don't think she really went on to do much, but Diane Lane, of course, has had a long career. The theme of the haves versus the have-nots, yeah, that definitely stands a test of time. That's in movies, that's in TV shows, that's in books, that's just a theme in American life. It was prevalent in the 1960s. It's prevalent today in 2020. One thing that really kind of hurts this movie, in my opinion, is the fact that you can tell this is a movie based on a book. And to be fair, I knew that it was based on a book because I picked up the DVD from my local library, as I often do. And I'll show you, James, you can see on the video chat, underneath where it says The Outsiders, it says S.E. Hinton's classic novel about youth.
I thought it was based on the R.E.M. Song, The Outsiders, from their 2002 album, Up.
Well, you should have known that that was not the case because this movie came out 20 years beforehand. So
that's true.
That should have been a red flag for you. But I felt like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I could see being in a book that they're just not going into in this movie. Courtney and I recently watched The Hate U Give, which is a movie based on a book. Also, in that case, I knew that it was a book because Courtney read it. But still, like, I could just tell there's stuff that's not in this movie, right? Like, there's extra stuff and connections between these characters that we're just not getting in the movie, but you get in the book, right? And Courtney was like, yes. And doing a little bit of research on Wikipedia today, it's like, yeah, there's clearly more to it in the book. I don't think the idea of calling a big fight a rumble stands the test of time. It made you think of Anchorman. It made me think of West Side Story. Yes, gangs get into fights still. That is a very real thing. I don't think they call them rumbles. Maybe they do.
I think they call it fisticuffs.
Oh, okay. What's the difference between a rumble and fisticuffs?
I believe the gangs in most American cities, they fight, you know, the way those 1920s boxers would do it by swinging their arms really wide in front of themselves.
Are they wearing like the black unitards too?
Exactly.
Okay.
Put up your dukes.
Right, right. This has nothing to do with standing the test of time, but I did just want to mention, I love the fact that Tubit, who is Emilio Estevez's character, really loves Mickey Mouse. He's wearing a Mickey Mouse shirt the whole movie, and then at one point they're watching Mickey Mouse cartoons on TV, and he's like, ooh, Mickey Mouse! Like, he's just really into Mickey Mouse. I just think that's a great little touch that has no bearing on the movie at all. I just like that. Overall, I'm going to say that this movie doesn't stand the test of time. I just feel like a lot of the acting is kind of done by kids who are going to be great actors someday. And here they're just not that great yet. And I don't mean to sound like I'm shitting on these great actors, but they're not at the top of their game. I don't think Francis Coppola is at the top of his game as a director in this movie either, to be honest. It takes place in the 60s, so all of the outdated cars and drive-in movies and whatever, all that stuff can be forgiven. But I think there's kind of a reason that this movie is sort of a footnote in terms of trivia. You know, like, did you know that all these actors were in a movie together? No, I didn't know that. Because it's just not that great of a story. I mean, also the giant plot hole of why were there kids in the abandoned church? I realize that's only one detail, but it really bothered me that there was no explanation for it at all. Yeah, I'm going to say it doesn't stand the test of time. What do you think, James?
You know, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. You know, Tom Cruise is an Academy Award, I believe, nominated actor. And a lot of people in this cast are Academy Award nominees, winners. You got Patrick Swayze. You've got real professionals and Rob Lowe and Emilio Estevez. You got Coppola at the helm, a beloved novel. And you just don't have, a good screenplay. And you also don't have actors that are as good as they need to be. Maybe also Ralph Macchio, you can't act good enough that your head superimposed on a sunset while you're reading a letter is not going to look cheesy. You know, it kind of reminded me, like when he's reading the letter at the end with Ralph Macchio superimposed, it reminded me of, there was this old Saturday Night Live short that they used to do called Deep Thoughts.
Oh my God. I love Deep Thoughts.
It would be this absolutely beautiful cinematography of some gazelle just sipping from a river, and it just has voiceover. And the voiceover is ridiculous. This one, the voiceover dialogue, I'd say the word is corny. I'm going to say this film does not stand the test of time because I think this is the kind of film that I think was a very deep film in 1983. And I think that the filmmakers of today and the filmmakers of even the last 10, 20 years, they watched this film as a child. And I can totally see how there's a lot of directors today or filmmakers that could be very influenced by this film. I just don't think the sum of the parts turns into a fun film to watch in the year 2020. And for that reason, I'm going to say that no, this film does not stand the test of time for me. It's not without its charm. It's not without its entertaining parts. So this is not a terrible film. I think you described it perfect, Al. It's a film that you hear trivia about because with that great a cast and crew behind it, it should be better. You know, but it just isn't. I just want to bring up one more interesting fact about Francis Ford Coppola. There was something shortly after this he filmed. It's something that I'll bet at one time you were in love with, but we will not be able to review.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It is a short film starring the most famous man on earth.
Michael Jackson?
That is correct. And what is a short film that I'm guessing a young Al saw in the late 80s, I'm going to say, that you cannot see anymore?
Captain EO?
Yes.
That's gotta be on YouTube.
But not in 3D at Disney World. You can't review it accurately.
That's not fair.
A film that you can really review today. And in case people don't know what this is, Captain EO, this was a 3D film starring the late Michael Jackson. And it was kind of like 15 minutes or something, but you wore like the classic 3D glasses. It was at, I want to say Epcot Center.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Epcot Center, which I believe Epcot is Experimental...
Prototype City of Tomorrow.
That's it. Or Community of City of Tomorrow. You're right. Experimental Prototype City of Tomorrow. It used to be all the futuristic stuff. So Captain EO was, I guess he was some kind of spaceman, Michael Jackson.
Sure.
It was like a Flash Gordon kind of thing. Or something like that.
Right. So Michelle D, thank you for suggesting this movie. I'm sorry that we said it doesn't stand the test of time. So in our first two fan request episodes, we've both said that the movie doesn't stand the test of time. Maybe we'll have better luck next week when we review The Beast. Sometimes it's called The Beast of War. This is a movie I'd never heard of, but it came to us from a fan on email. Nick Peticcio emailed us and requested that we do this movie. It's a movie that not a lot of people have heard of. People who know about it love it. And we'll round out our trilogy of fan requests with The Beast of War. It's on Amazon Prime if anyone wants to watch it with us for the first time. In the meantime, please do keep the conversation going with us at Test of Time Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or email us thetestoftimepodcast@gmail.com. We do read everything you write. If you have a request, let us know. We'll do it at some point in the future. And yeah, if you're listening to us November 20th, 21st, or 22nd, 2020, go to nixmarathon.org and watch us play some video games.
We will see you next week, and we will see you at Nix Marathon. So long, folks.
Bye, everybody.